You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff here with Jonathan Mayo and Jim Callis, and we are, of course, going to talk about the draft and the draft combine, which is going on this week, the second annual draft combine, this time in San Diego, California, which is where Jim will be joining us from. And we'll also talk a little bit about the College World Series. The Super Regionals are past us, and we're into the College World Series in Omaha. We'll take a look at a couple of players, one player who may have helped his draft stock in the Super Regionals and another who may not have. And then we'll look ahead at some potential first-round picks that you can watch during the College World Series. Talk about a couple guys who have pitched recently of note in this year's draft class. And we are going to talk to last year's number one overall draft pick, Henry Davis, who went to last year's draft combine. And coming out of that, there was a lot of talk about how valuable his interview process was there. And Jonathan had a chance to talk to him about that. We will preview this week's MILB on MLB.TV slate, and we're going to wrap up with a bit of a special edition of the mailbag. We got a great question from a listener who liked last week's college pitching draft that Jim and Jonathan did, asked if they would consider doing an outfield draft for the show. We did consider it. We'll let you know at the end of the show what we decided. Unless, Jim, Jonathan, you want to give away the answer now.
I think you've killed the suspense there, but that's okay.
We're going to do it. After careful consideration, we decided to do it. Jim, welcome. We're recording at noon Eastern, and we started prep, you know, quite a while ago. You're up early. You just arrived in San Diego for the draft combine. I know we talked about it a little bit last week, but now you're there. Now we know who else is there, even more important than you, if that's possible, the players.
No.
Now, several people more important than me.
Yeah, there is a who's who of baseball at the combine involved in the whole process. Tell us a little bit about the players that we're going to be seeing there, and also just sort of this honor roll of baseball past stars and luminaries that are there with you.
Yeah, well, there's, I don't know the exact count. There were 255 players the last time I looked that are supposed to come. A couple of those guys are in the College World Series, so they obviously won't be here. But the last time I looked, it was something like 139 players off of our draft top 200 are here, including 20 of the top 30. So you have the players here. They're obviously the main focus, but then I've lost count of all the big leaguers. I know Trevor Hoffman's here. Dante Bichette, Mike Cameron, Eric Davis, Torrey Hunter, Charles Nagy, Dimitri Young, the many big leaguers who work for MLB Network. Most of them are here. There's a lot going on. You know, today's kind of not a on-field day so much. You know, guys are getting into town last night, I guess some today. A lot of interviews scheduled for today. But then starting Wednesday, we'll have games between some of the high school players Wednesday and Thursday. We'll have performance, strength, and quickness workouts going on Thursday, pro style workouts Friday and Saturday. And, you know, I had not read the fine print until I was writing our preview story last week, guys. And I had not necessarily realized that we're doing a 3-hour broadcast on Thursday during some of those strength and performance assessments. And then what was the 5-hour workout broadcast last year is now a 6.5-hour workout broadcast. So instead of 5 hours of live programming in one day, you will get 9.5 hours of live combine programming over 2 days toward the end of this week.
A workout.
More Jim Callis for everybody.
Yeah, a workout in itself.
Correct. I will not, I know you guys have egged me on, I will not be doing any force plate workouts or 30-yard dashes. There will be no pulled hamstrings or injuries that I will be incurring, that I will leave that to the much younger players. And they will not get hurt, obviously, but I would probably injure myself.
All right, let's talk about the much younger players. Jim, you mentioned 20 of the top 30 overall that will be there, nearly half of the players there are coming from our top 200 draft prospects list. So there are a lot of real top of the line draft prospects there. Some of them will participate in the on-field workouts. Some of them will not. Some of them will participate in the game. Some will not. Let's highlight a couple of the guys that you guys know who will be participating in some form or fashion that you are most interested to see there.
So do I get to pick one or do I get to pick two?
Well, you can pick two if you want, but let's take one
like
first.
You ever listen to the rules when it comes to
this? Well, he said a couple, so I didn't know if I'm in a couple between us or I got to pick two guys.
Well, you can pick two if you want. I know you guys have, you know, we prepared for this and you guys each have a guy, you have a guy each, but if you have another, if you have a bonus selection, feel free.
Okay, well, I'm going to give you two names. I think I'll go pitchers and I'll let Jonathan talk hitters. He can talk, Jonathan, you can go three hitters if you want and I won't complain.
I do not.
But anyway, I'm going to give you two pitchers. I think the biggest attraction here is Alabama left-hander Connor Prelip. And we've talked about him a bunch on the podcast. He's one of several pitchers who would have been locked first-round picks this year, if not for injury questions. And he was a potential candidate to go number one overall. He got hurt in his first start of 2021 and had Tommy John surgery last May. And the only time teams have seen him pitch since then was May 23rd. He threw a bullpen workout in the rain before the SEC tournament started. All the scouts were in town. And as we talked about, you know, he took care of business. He wasn't trying to light up the gun. You know, it looked good. The arm looked like it was working well. But I think that's going to be the must-see. If you had to pick one guy who everybody has to see, it's going to be Connor Prelip. Because, again, they've also – I can't remember if we talked about this on last week's podcast. They've changed the rules. And, you know, starting last Friday, the 10th, you can no longer – like, starting the 10th and through the draft – you can't work out individually for teams. So if you want to see Connor Prelip pitch, you need to see him here. Now, it's possible. I think Connor Prelip could hold a workout and invite teams to it going forward, but everybody really wants to see how he's going to do. And I do think if he pitches well, he could factor somewhere in the middle of the first round. This is very analogous to the situation Cal Quantrill went through when he was at Stanford and wound up being the number 8 overall pick in the draft. And then my kind of sleeper guy who I'm super intrigued to see, And I don't think he's got seen as much as a lot of other top guys, is Jacob Mizorowski, who's a right-hand pitcher from Crowder, Missouri Junior College, is what I'm trying to say. And he's been this intriguing, you know, 6'7" guy with a live arm who had a hamstring injury on the showcase circuit in 2019. The pandemic came in 2020, and then he tore his meniscus early on at Crowder last year. So people really haven't seen him pitch a lot until this year. And he was healthy. He was up to 100 miles an hour repeatedly with his four-seam fastball, which really plays up. He's 6'7", so there's great extension. It's got high spin rates. It's got induced vertical break. I mean, it's a really unhittable fastball. And his mid-80s slider was a wipeout pitch at times. And his command would fluctuate because he's really inexperienced, but he really pitched well down the stretch. And again, you know, it's a bullpen. He's not going to be pitching in games against these guys. But, it's hard sometimes to sit on junior college guys during the season. And so I think he's going to be a guy that people are really eager to watch out here in San Diego.
Jonathan, forgive me, but I'm going to tee Jim up for one more pitcher.
Uh-oh.
Because
I'll go get a sandwich.
I think this is someone that everyone wants to see just for the fact that he throws harder than perhaps anyone on the planet. And that is Ben Joyce. And are we going to get a chance to see him throw at the combine?
Yeah, he's scheduled. You know, Tennessee got upset in the Super Regionals, so they're not in Omaha. But he is scheduled to pitch on Friday on TV. There will be 8 pitchers who I believe we will see their bullpens. I don't know if we'll see every pitch, but they're going to show a lot of these guys throwing bullpens. And you will see Connor Prelip, you will see Jacob Mizorowski, and you will see Ben Joyce. I don't know if Ben's going to try to air it out and hit 106 for everybody, but it'll be fun to watch. And I'll say this for people who watch the broadcast. You know, when Joyce has pitched in games, it's been about 80-85% fastballs, and he's got a slider. It's weird. Like the slider, I don't think he throws it for strikes very much, but he gets some swings and misses when he does. Because if guys are gearing up to hit 103, they start swinging when the ball leaves his hand. It doesn't matter if it winds up in the left-handed batter's box. But the thing to look for, he's got a really good changeup, but I think he only threw 12, or a really intriguing changeup, I should say, that looks good when he's warming up. He's only thrown like maybe 12 or 15 times in games. So hopefully we'll get to see a few changeups because it's supposed to be fairly promising. But yeah, I would imagine, I don't know exactly who we'll be focusing on, but I'll venture guess we might get Ben Joyce's complete 5-minute bullpen, monitoring how hard he's throwing. It seems like a safe guess, doesn't it?
I think so. But I do love that only on this podcast where we'd be talking about a guy who throws 105 and Jim's like, I can't wait to see him throw his off speed stuff.
Well, I mean, again, I watched Ben Joyce against Notre Dame.
That was a positive. That was a compliment, Jim, because I think everyone was going to be like, oh, I want to see the radar gun readings. And you're like, no, I want to see how he deadens spin.
I want to see his pickoff move.
Well, you know, maybe they'll do that for you. I'll talk to Mark Wiener and the guys over at MLB Network and say that Jason Ratliff requests some pickoff moves.
Oh, that would be riveting TV.
We'll get Harold over at first. Harold Reynolds will be at first taking the lead.
There we go.
It'll be a contest. Who can pick Harold off?
We've seen Harold on the field before. All right. Jonathan, Jim's one player turned into three. Let's see what you do.
Well, I mean, it was two. You turned it into three. Don't put that all in
there. I didn't say who turned it into three. I said it turned into three.
All right. Fair enough. There are a lot of interesting players who are going to be there, and but the guy who is the highest ranked hitter who's going to be there and is the best pure hitter in the draft class is Tamar Johnson, the infielder from Georgia. And I think what's interesting about him, and he's taking BP, he's not really doing anything else there. I think he'll benefit from meeting with teams because, as we know, having been on our podcast, you're only going to come away liking him more after talking with him. But I think having him take batting practice, one, it's going to be fun. If we saw him take BP in Coors Field last year, and that's why he was my pick for the high school home run derby, even though he's not all that big. There's so much surprising power. But this is a guy who had a really good summer. He came out of the summer as the best pure hitter in the class, period. Certainly the best high school hitter we've seen in quite some time. And then, as we've talked about on the podcast, spent the spring in a not very competitive conference on a not very good team. So he didn't see good pitching and he didn't see many strikes. And a lot of scouts and scouting directors were frustrated in that they didn't really get to evaluate him at all this spring. So right now, most evaluations are being done from last summer. I'm sure he's done some private workouts. Nothing's going to happen in one batting practice session at the combine that's going to greatly alter things, but I do think that teams will be grateful for another look at him in an on-field setting. He's playing in a wood bat league right now, so that I know teams have been going in, higher ups from teams picking in the top half of the first round are going in to see him play in that league, against better pitching and with wood in his hands. So I think he's he's one who I think will be fun to watch take batting practice. And there are a bunch of other guys, a lot of college guys. You talked about Tennessee getting upset, so they're not there. I'll throw out a Virginia Tech name just because I saw Cade Hunter on the list. That's Mariners scouting director Scott Hunter's son. He had a really good year, kind of intriguing, especially to analytic teams. So I think he's going to do some damage in batting practice too.
All right. We got two names out of you.
I felt like I always make fun of Jim for never saying just one name. So I was like, I better throw in an extra name this time.
All right. So MLB draft combine action coming your way all week this week. Definitely stay tuned on MLB.com/pipeline and certainly keep track on the network on Thursday and Friday, the broadcasts starting at noon. On both of those days, noon Eastern. So stay tuned for that. Another big event involving a lot of MLB draft prospects, College World Series, Super Regionals. We're going to take a quick look back at the Super Regionals, and we'll take a look ahead at the College World Series. Jonathan, tell us about one guy who helped himself in the Super Regionals and a guy who may have hurt his stock a bit.
Yeah. So Jake Bennett, Oklahoma, I think had, you know, he's in our top 100. He's 6'6" lefty. He really knows how to pitch. And I think he really helped himself in the Big 12 tournament because he was completely dominant. He struck out 12 in that start. It was up to 96. He was throwing a tick harder. And then he went out and, you know, he started against Virginia Tech, which one of the better lineups in the country. A lot of guys who can really hit with a lot of power. And he put up 5 zeros. He ended up giving up one unearned run in that start, but went 7 innings. And he just, you know, I had not seen him. And I ended up watching most of that game just because he was carving them up. And, you know, he wasn't lighting up the radar gun. He was mostly low 90s. He kept being able to reach back for 94 when he needed it, even as the start went on. But it was more his ability to mix speeds and throw his breaking ball for strikes and getting them to chase. You know, all through that start, it looked like he was getting an inch or two off of the plate, and he just lived out there, and he was putting the ball on a dime. It was very, very impressive. And, you know, one start's not going to move a guy up or down all that much, but the way he finished, well, he's not done yet. Right now he gets to go pitch in Omaha too. So the more he pitches that well with that much pressure and under that kind of spotlight, the more it's going to help him. And then the flip side of that, I think, is Blade Tidwell, who we've talked quite a bit about just because he was a guy who was thought of to be a top half of the first round kind of guy, one of the better college arms for a really good Tennessee team. And then he missed the first 6 weeks with a shoulder issue. Then it took him another month to get back into the rotation. And it looked like he was kind of heading in the right direction and then really kind of tailed off. And his Super Regional start was rough. You know, he got knocked around. He didn't command the baseball well. He only went 3 innings. And, you know, so that's the last start that is in everyone's minds. And it did not leave a good last impression for those who are watching to see, especially for a guy who needed to show kind of a progression, coming off of that injury, you know, of him building up and going in the right direction. And he did not do that with his Super Regional start.
All right, Jonathan, stop living in the past. Jim, let's look ahead to the future.
Yeah, well, you guys know my favorite event of all is College World Series. And, you know, it's interesting. There are not – I was looking. I came up with 3 potential first-round picks in this year's College World Series. And, you know, we saw there were a lot of upsets in the Super Regional round. I believe 6 road teams won, which is, I think, the all-time record. And it's interesting, like, I've been talking to a couple scouts about this, just talking about college players during the year. And, you know, you go back to 2020, when pre-pandemic, we were supposed to have a 40-round draft, and there were a bunch of guys who were juniors who counted on being drafted that year, just natural way of things. And instead, we had a pandemic, and we had a 5-round draft. And so a bunch of guys didn't go get drafted and went back to school, and they got a year of eligibility back. And last year, the draft was only 20 rounds. And, you know, as we talk about all the time, a lot of teams look at age. And 22-year-old players, you know, in college, especially position players, aren't as attractive as the 21-year-old players who were in that crop. So a lot of the guys who might have been drafted in 2020 didn't get drafted in 2021 because they're a year older. And in 2022, they're back. There's a lot of 20 – I don't have the numbers. I don't know what the record is. But you will see more 23-year-old players playing in this College World Series. And you have some older teams of guys who are just really good college baseball players. You know, Notre Dame upset Tennessee. And I believe everybody in their starting lineup, except for Jack Brannigan, who's on our top 200, although teams like him more as a pitcher, has already graduated. You know, Texas A&M, which, you know, won a couple one-run games against Louisville and has gone through the postseason pretty easily. They don't have anybody on our top 200, and they aren't going to have anybody on our top 250. But the So it's I don't feel like it's quite as prospect laden where everywhere you turn, there's a first round pick for this year's draft on every team. But there are some interesting guys. I think the 3 best players there are Brock Jones from Stanford, outfielder. We talked about him a lot. He got off to a bad start, was a projected top 10 pick, and he's come on lately and hit a bunch of home runs. And then a couple of slugging infielders who are pretty good athletes, and that's Arkansas third baseman Caden Wallace and Oklahoma shortstop Peyton Graham, both of whom played really well in the postseason. So I think those are probably your three best guys, you know, in terms of this year's draft. I think from a pitching standpoint, you know, Jonathan mentioned Jake Bennett. You know, like, I mean, we've talked about how uncertain the pitching is. So I'm not going to say he can't go in the first round. He's probably a second rounder, I would say, Jonathan. Does that feel right to you, Jake Bennett?
I think so. I mean, if someone reached and took him in a comp round and saved some money because he performs and he's big and left-handed, yeah. But yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, and you see college pitchers get pushed up too. So maybe he goes 28th to somebody. And then I was going to say that the two pitchers to keep an eye on, so I'm going six players here, so I've doubled my allotment from the first question. Watch Cade Horton on Oklahoma. I don't know if you guys remember him from the 2020 draft. He was a right-hander slash shortstop slash quarterback who threw for 4,000 yards. Went to Oklahoma, had Tommy John surgery, so he didn't play in 21. And he really didn't, you know, he's played some third base and DH. He's not doing a whole lot with the bat, and he really was just kind of generic and not doing a whole lot in the mound. And one of the reasons Oklahoma's in Omaha is he's kicked it into gear with the Big 12 tournament against Texas, who's also in Omaha, and then Florida in the regionals and Virginia Tech in super regionals. Three starts, 17 and two-thirds innings, 25 strikeouts, five walks, sitting at 95 with the fastball, sitting at 85 with the swing and the slider. He looks like the Cade Horton we saw in high school. And he might, if he gets a chance to pitch once or twice in Omaha and continues to pitch like this, first round might be a stretch, but I don't know. Like, he's showing first round stuff, and he has that pedigree. And then the other arm to kind of keep an eye on is Liam Simon of Notre Dame, who was great in the ACC tournament and really good against Texas Tech in the regionals, struggled against Tennessee. They gave him a start against Tennessee, and he wasn't throwing strikes. But he's up to 99 miles an hour. He's got a really hard slider. And in the, you know, counting the ACC tournament in the postseason, he's got 18 strikeouts in 9 2/3 innings. So he's maybe pushing himself up in the third round. So from a talent standpoint, that's probably the best guys for this year's draft. And now I'm going to put you both on the spot. You've done no research. You're not prepared for this question. It doesn't matter. Who are you guys picking to win the College World Series? And to buy you a second of time, I will lay out the teams. In one bracket, you've got Oklahoma, Texas A&M, Notre Dame, and Texas. And in the other bracket, you have Arkansas, Stanford, Ole Miss, and Auburn. Those are your matchups. So who's winning the national title, guys?
Is it too lame to take the top seed there in Stanford? They've looked mighty good. I'll take them.
You can take Stanford. Jonathan, who are you going with?
You know what? I'm going to take Oklahoma.
Jim, your pick?
I like your pick. I'm going to take Texas, but Oklahoma would be my second choice. I you know, it's going to be interesting because there's not, you know, last year there was a lot of talk about, you know, Rocker and Leiter and Vanderbilt pitched them to the finals, and you had, you know, Will Bednar and Landon Sims, you know, first round pick, and a guy who probably would have been a first round pick if he gotten hurt, you know, pushing Mississippi State to the finals. This year, I think it's going to be wide open. Like, you know, if it wound up, you know, Ole Miss has got a veteran team. Arkansas, you know, had the best team in the country last year and got upset on the way to Omaha. Texas A&M's got a veteran team. Notre Dame, we just saw them knock off Tennessee. I you know, Auburn's got probably as much pitching depth as a lot of the teams there. It's going to be interesting. I do not remember a College World Series that felt this wide open where I think, you know, you probably have eight teams that have a legitimate chance to win it. It may be, just because the way things played out, the most balanced College World Series I can remember in a long time.
Well, it'll be even more interesting now that we have $25,000 on the line. That College World Series starts on Friday, 2 p.m. Eastern, first game. So you can, of course, watch all those games over the ensuing days. So keep an eye on that. Let's talk. We've talked about the Combine. We've talked about the College World Series. All of it, how it pertains to the upcoming draft. Let's talk about a couple of guys who are neither at the Combine nor in the College World Series, but we're keeping an eye on and have pitched recently. Of course, Kumar Rocker, we talked about at length, his return to the mound last week. He's pitched again. And then Carson Wisenhunt has made his debut in the Cape. Talk a little bit about these two guys.
Well, I mean, I think quickly on Rocker, you know, the all the reports that we've heard that the stuff more or less looked the same in outing number two as it did in outing number one. Teams have been pretty impressed with how it's looked. And then, you know, we go back to the same questions always, is like they're going to need to see medical reports before anything happens. But in terms of on the mound, like he's come out and throwing well. I actually talked, Wizenhunt was a guy who missed all year because of suspension. He's pitching in the Cape. I happened to, because I'm working on the mock this week, talk to somebody who just saw his Cape start. He was up to 94 in the first and then kind of was about 91 to 92 in the third. And this guy hadn't pitched all spring, so I think there's some buildup to be expected. He did give up a few runs over his three innings. The changeup was really, really good. The fastball command was spotty. Slurvy breaking ball, sort of upper 70s to 80. Looked a little bit rusty, but you could see the glimpses of the pitchability that, you know, made him so intriguing before he got shelved for the year.
Yeah, that sounds like kind of basic Carson Wisenhunt, you know, albeit a little bit rusty. I mean, the changeup's his best pitch. You know, he's the guy who usually tops out around 95 anyway. You know, he's not a big radar gun guy, and his breaking ball is definitely his third pitch. It seemed like he pitched fairly well. Gave a two-run homer to Peyton Williams of Iowa, who, you know, is going to probably go on day two of the draft, first baseman from Iowa. And, you know, it's funny. I still feel like I'm getting as many Kumar Rocker questions, Jonathan, since he started pitching. He struggled with his command. I think Kumar struggled with his command the first inning where he hit a guy and walked a couple and only went three total because he got to his pitch count. But I had a scouting director reach out, and he's like, is Kumar Rocker going ahead of us? And I was like, I don't know. Like, what's his medical look like? And the scouting director's like, I don't know. Everybody's asking. I mean, we're still all asking the same questions. Nobody knows quite sure, you know, what's going to happen. And it'll be interesting. I mean, you know, we talked about it. At some point, they're going to have to release medical information because you can't just go give Kumar Rocker millions of dollars without knowing exactly what you're dealing with physically.
All right. We are going to take a break. When we come back, Jonathan had a chance to talk to last year's number one overall draft pick, Henry Davis, who went to the draft combine last year, didn't participate in the on-field stuff, but from all reports, the interview process there certainly did not hurt his case in going number one overall, and Jonathan had a chance to talk to him. We'll listen to that coming up next on the MLB Pipeline podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline podcast. This is Jonathan Mayo, and recently I had the chance to chat with last year's number one overall pick, Henry Davis. We spent the first segment talking a lot about the draft combine. He went to last year's combine, and there was a lot of talk that his ability to sit down and interview with all the teams, but obviously the Pirates, played a part in them feeling comfortable taking him number one. So I had a chance to talk with Henry about that, about the draft process overall. He attended last year's draft, and he was quick to sing those praises. So let's listen into my conversation with now Pirates prospect Henry Davis.
All right, Henry, the draft combine is the second draft combine is about to start, and you went last year. Can you talk a little bit about the importance, like what the the takeaways and the benefits you found in going were for you?
Yeah, well, it gave me the opportunity to meet with all the potential teams in person, which, especially in the fall with COVID, we didn't have that opportunity to even meet with our area scouts in person. So whoever they wanted to be there, you could sit in and shake their hands and actually talk to them in person. And you could do it. I think I did all of them in a day or a little more.
Yeah, it's almost, I've said sort of the one-stop shopping. It seems beneficial to players and the teams, because otherwise you're setting up, whether it's Zooms or trying to do in-home visits or, right. COVID or no COVID, that's a lot of logistics. This is kind of a way to do it all in one fell swoop.
Right. And everybody's schedules line up. Like, you take 2 days and whether it's on-field stuff or not, I did the off-field stuff and just bang it out. And then you kind of check the box and move forward.
I was going to ask, did you do any of the on-field stuff, or was it just the medical and interviews?
I did not. I just did the interviews.
Okay. Did you do the medical there too?
I did not.
Oh, so just the interviews. All right. Which is benefit enough.
Yeah.
How much, one of the things that sort of came out after the Pirates took you is that what they thought of you, not just your skills on the field, which you had shown, throughout your college career, but like, what was going on inside, like your makeup, your character. Right. How much do you think your conversation with the Pirates at the Combine contributed to you being the number one overall pick?
I think a lot. I think a decent bit of my strengths lie off the field. And in my mindset, I agree with what they said. I mean, I'm someone who focuses on getting better. And I mean, you treat it like a job interview, just like anyone else coming out of college would, that you want them to want to hire you. So kind of getting the chance to look them in the eye and explain that and explain your goals. And I mean, I thought it was very beneficial.
Was it at that interview or was it in other conversations? Because I remember one of the things they said, because, I know that you've seen the reports and people say questions about your ability behind the plate. And one of the things that they said that really convinced you is that you wanted to be the, not just a catcher, you wanted to be the best catcher. Like, was that talked about there?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of talked about how I was a late bloomer. I grew late in high school. And then, I mean, did anybody my freshman year of college think I was going to be a really good hitter? No. And then I worked myself to that point. And then, after COVID, it was a focus of mine to get better at catching, but there's a long road. And I feel like I'm at a point now where I'm making significant strides, especially with the professional coaching we have. And I mean, I communicated that. I said, that's my goal. I said, this is what I want to do. And I kind of laid it out. Like, once I set this, like, it's going to be something I work hard at every day.
What advice, I mentioned that, the combine is starting up next week. What advice would you have for players who are headed to this year's combine, whatever it is that they're planning to do?
I think it's good to go. I don't think anyone necessarily needs to do anything they're not comfortable with. If that's someone who's played a long season and doesn't feel like, the showcase on field is going to be in their best interest, don't do it. And the same thing for the interviews. If you want to go and just do the interviews or whatnot, like, pick whatever works for you. But I thought it was beneficial. And I mean, I thought it helped me.
Yeah. One thing that Ben Sherrington said, that it wasn't even just the interview. It was the fact that you decided to go. I mean, you were a guy who you had worked yourself into being, I'll be conservative and say, a top 10 pick at the very least, probably top five. A lot of guys would have been like, I'm good, but you saw this as an opportunity. And the fact that you put yourself out there like that also showed something about who you were. Was there any thought of maybe I shouldn't go? Because you said don't do things you're not comfortable with, but
yeah,
you pushed yourself a little out of the comfort zone by putting yourself out there like that.
No, so I definitely, the people around me, Coach Mack and other people I trust, we kind of weighed the options and I played really well. I had nothing left to prove on the field. But at the end of the day, I thought as long as they were comfortable with me just doing the interviews, that it would be a good opportunity. And like I said earlier, I mean, it's no different than another job interview. Like, you want these people to be comfortable with you and you also want to be comfortable with them. Like, there were meetings that I had that I thought, wow, like, I'd really like to be a part of this organization. And then there were other ones that I had no interest in being a part of just because of the way they communicated their organization's interests and whatnot. And that, I mean, that's important. I know it's at the end of the day, whoever picks you, but you do have some say in it. So I thought it was important and I was really thankful I went and got that information ahead of time.
And then you went and, you know, obviously you're at the draft, you get taken 1-1, like, this is going to happen again next month in Los Angeles. You know, what advice, if any, do you have for this coming draft class about that whole process? Because I'm sure there's a lot of tension involved in terms of, like,
yeah,
is it going to happen? Especially because last year it was not an obvious slam dunk, like, you know, you're the guy, or this guy was clearly the guy. You know what I mean? Like, there were a lot of balls in the air for Pittsburgh, I think, until, you know, fairly, like, just, you know, what advice would you have for this incoming class?
I didn't necessarily want to go to the draft. I think anybody who knows me knows that's not really my scene, but my family really did. Like, and my family, especially as everybody else's family in this draft class and mine, was like, they do everything behind the scenes from, you know, the time you're 10, 11 years old, driving around the country and sacrificing everything for you. So I thought, I mean, that's the least I could do to give back. And, you know, if things go bad, you're in the spotlight a little bit, but when things go well and your name's called, your family's also there with you. So I thought it was cool.
One of the good things that MLB Network, I think, has done since we've been doing the draft is if things go a little bit sideways, because the baseball draft is,
yeah,
it's such a crapshoot. Like, they don't focus on, you know, there have been times where guys don't go and you just don't see them on screen. So at least there's that. I guess in a general, like, what, it's only a year ago for you, so it's not like you're some grizzled veteran or anything like that. But, like, were you able to just enjoy, you know, being there, or even if you weren't there, just the process of looking back, you know, is there anything that you would tell this year's class and sort of, like, this, you know, here's what I would do to sort of try to maximize that day? Because for many of them, especially the first rounders, it's only going to happen once.
Yeah, I would probably say how I thought about it was, I was in the spot where even I knew I was going to go in the first. So I was comfortable going, and at least within the picks that were on that day. But like you said, it can fluctuate so much that 20 can become 40 really fast. So make sure you have a pretty good idea of every scenario that can happen. And then just kind of weigh it. I mean, anything can happen, but I really enjoyed it and being there with my family.
It was the first time for us in, you know, in like a theater, because it had always been in the network studios, which was fun, but it was a whole different energy. You didn't have what to compare it to, but I thought that was pretty cool.
I thought it was awesome. And I mean, I wasn't stressed out because once I got to the theater, I knew I was going first. So,
right.
Yeah, it was a different experience for me than I'm really close with Ryan Cusick, and I know he was not enjoying it as much as I was until he got picked, and then he was enjoying it a lot.
I think, you know, everybody will look back, like, and even he, like, he was enjoying it. Like, he'll look back, and even the tension of that will be a positive.
Yeah, like,
I was sweating, but
yeah, I think people going, especially in the front half, I think the more people go, the better. I mean, the main thought for me, even personally, like, say, take my family out of it, was that we're always calling to grow the game. I think that's super important. It's a topic of conversation this offseason. That why wouldn't I contribute to an event that we're actually trying to grow the game? We're trying to get more fans to see this at your younger prospects. I think it really helped.
My thanks again to Henry Davis. He is healthy once again back in Double A. So keep an eye for his upward trajectory in the Pirates system. But it was good to talk to him about the combine and all things draft. We're going to take another break. When we come back, the whole gang will be back and we'll preview this week's MILB on MLB.TV schedule and do a draft next on the MLB Pipeline Podcast.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo. We are going to break down this week's MILB on MLB.TV schedule. We've got five more games coming your way this week. You can watch these games for free on MLB.com and MLB.TV. Got a game Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday. Jonathan, looking at the slate, the one to watch for you?
I was going to be a homer, but I'm not going to be. I think I'm going to pick Wednesday's 6:45 tilt. That's Toledo at Worcester. That's Riley Green facing off against Brian Bello. You know, I think the real draw for me is just getting to see Riley Green play. You know, I might have been in the big leagues if he hadn't gotten hurt. So he's you know, getting himself going now. He's only been back about almost 2 weeks. But he's starting to swing the bat. Well, as we are recording, he's got a 4-game hit streak. So that's who I'll take.
I'm going to go to the Sunday game. Sorry, Jason, I was anticipating your question. I'm going to go with the Sunday game, Las Vegas at El Paso, 8:05 Eastern. I'm going to go with watching two of the better catching prospects in the minor leagues, Shea Langeliers for the A's, Luis Camposano for the Padres, and throwing a little C.J. Abrams as well. So that is my pick, Sunday night, 8 p.m.
All right. And the rest of that slate, Jonathan said he was tempted to be a homer. That would have been Thursday's Erie at Altoona game. That loaded Altoona team with Henry Davis back in the lineup, as Jonathan mentioned, also Leo Paguero. Quinn Priester is back, but not yet with the curve, and Nick Gonzalez on the IL and not yet back, but hopefully be seeing those guys back soon as well, and just an absolutely loaded Altoona team there. Other games on the docket: Somerset at New Hampshire, Saturday at 7:05 Eastern. That's Anthony Volpe versus Aurelvis Martinez, Yankees Blue Jays affiliates. And Tuesday's game, as we record now, Delmarva at Salem with O's first-round pick from a couple years back, Heston Kjerstad, who just made his pro debut over the past week, facing Marcelo Meyer, last year's top five overall pick of the Red Sox. So make sure to watch on MLB.com and MLB.TV this week. All right, let's move along to the mailbag, where Ed Casey, Casey W. Sox, his Twitter handle, said, "Hi, Jim. I loved the pitcher draft and found it very informative due to the numerous injuries with this year's draft class. With the deep outfield class and many of the college prospects bunched together on the pipeline list, would you consider an outfield draft for the show?" We're going to answer this in one word. Yes.
Yes, but we're not going to do the draft. We'll just consider it.
Right. We'll consider it.
All right. That's going to, no. All right. So let's do this draft. Jim, you in between during our break, you adamantly declared that you get the first pick because Jonathan had the first pick in the pitcher's draft, so you have...
Belly ached, I would say.
You have 1-1. Who are you going to go with in the 2022 outfield draft prospect draft?
I will take the guy who I would take if I was picking 1-1 and could consider any position. I will take number one on our draft top 200, Drew Jones, high school outfielder from Georgia. You may have heard of his father, Andrew, who won 10 gold gloves and made 5 all-star teams. And, you know, basically he's very reminiscent of his dad. I think he might be the best defender in this year's draft. He's a great center fielder. He also looks pretty slick taking ground balls at shortstop. I don't think anybody's going to try him there because he's so good in center. He can really throw. He can really run. He can really hit. The power's coming. He's taken better at-bats and made better swing decisions this year. I think Drew Jones is going to be a superstar. So I will take Drew Jones with the number one pick in the outfield draft.
Yeah, seemingly easy enough pick there. The number one ranked player on our top 200 draft prospects list. Number two, also an outfielder. Jonathan, is that your pick?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it'll get more surprising or, you know, less according to chalk. So, yeah, I will take Elijah Green. And to parrot Jim said, perhaps you remember his father. His father, Eric, was a Pro Bowl tight end in the NFL, Eric Green. Green has tremendous raw power, as good raw tools as anybody. There were some questions over the summer about a little swing and miss in his game. And, you know, playing for IMG Academy, faced a lot of good competition this spring, and I think answered a lot of those questions. So while Drew Jones is clearly the top player, you know, Elijah Green is, you know, not super far behind and is, to me, the easy pick for number two. He's big and strong. He can really run. He also can play center, but if you wanted to move him to right, you know, you could do that because he's got a plus arm as well.
All right. Next up at number three, Jim, your pick. And as I look down the list here, I realize that we did not discuss whether a player such as Jacob Berry, who's listed on our list as a third base slash outfielder, is eligible for this draft, and that could come into play here.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that. Like, I made a list. I was just looking at guys we had listed as outfielders first, but like,
I mean, you could put anybody in the outfield.
Yeah, you know what? You bring up a good point, Jason, and it's funny because I was kind of sorting just by, and he sorted in with the third baseman. I will have to take Jacob Berry here now. I don't think he's really going to stick at third base. I don't think many teams do. I think he can play a passable outfield, but I've been, you know, the big Jacob Berry fan on the podcast all spring. I just think it's the best combination track record of hitting for average, hitting for power, drawing walks, controlling the strike zone in the college ranks. His exit velocities have been kind of surprisingly just okay this year, and that's like a little bit of a red flag on top of the defense, but I will take Jacob Berry here. Boy, if you hadn't said that and Jonathan had gone the Jacob Berry route, and I don't know if you were considering him, Jonathan, you would have heard an astonished gasp for me when Jonathan took Jacob Berry. So
I think we should re-record just so we could hear Jim gasp astonishingly.
You'll have to wait for a future podcast.
Hope I didn't blow your pick there, Jonathan.
No, it's all right.
All right, fourth pick.
I'm gonna stay the high end son of a former big leaguer route, and I'm gonna take Justin Crawford. That's Carl Crawford's son. I feel like we always have to comment on how old we've gotten whenever we talk, especially this with this guy in particular, since I remember covering Carl in the Futures game. But you know, Justin has sort of been moving his way up boards. I don't know that he's moving up any more than he is right now. His name is all over, you know, top 10 conversations. He can hit. Obviously, he can really run. That shouldn't surprise anybody. Left-handed hitter, probably, you know, top of the order kind of guy. I don't know how much power there's going to be, but he can play center field really well. And that speed is, you know, you don't have a lot of guys with 70 speed in this draft class with the kind of bat to ball skills that he has.
Jonathan, do you remember what Carl Crawford did in the Futures game?
I think he homered.
I don't think he did.
No, I don't remember at all.
I think he went 0-3 with a strikeout.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry. 0-3 with stolen base. All right. Three high school outfield draft prospects off the board. One college third baseman slash outfielder off the board. And Jim, number five.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of college guys for the rest of this draft. Are we going, I don't even remember, are we going 10 deep or 12 deep here?
Let's go 10 deep.
I think there will be at most one more high school outfielder taken. I'm going to take Gavin Cross here from Virginia Tech. He's the best hitter in that deep Virginia Tech lineup that Jonathan was referencing earlier. He, if you're into exit velocity, hits the ball just about as hard as anybody in college baseball. And I think this guy's going to hit for average and power. He did a better job controlling the strike zone this spring. Was really good with the U.S. College team last summer. You know, he's like a 55 runner chance to play center field. You know, might be more of a corner guy, but he's got a chance to play up the middle. So, and on my team, I don't even need him to play up the middle, do I? Because I've got Drew Jones in center. So I'll have him flanked by Jacob Berry and Gavin Cross right now. So very happy to add Gavin Cross to the club.
All right, number six, Jonathan Mayo on the clock.
I love, Jim, how you're forming some sort of roster that's going to have five outfielders. I mean, you're going to have a five-man outfield?
I'm going to put Jacob Berry, but I guess I'll put him at first base.
Well, now then you're admitting that you're cheating.
He's played the outfield this year. I can move my guys.
Can I take Tamar Johnson and say I'm going to turn him into an outfielder?
Drew Jones is going to be my shortstop. So. I'm telling you, though.
You could do that, actually. All right, fine. So I am.
I just want to say real quick, though. He's playing on a team with Jeff Blauser's kid, who's a really good shortstop, big shock. But guys swear that if he wasn't so good in center field, that Drew Jones looks really good taking ground balls at short.
I have heard that as well. So, you mentioned that, Jim, that it's going to be mostly college outfielders. And I don't know that there's I think they're kind of all bunched together. So I'm going to ride the hot hand here, and I'm going to take Brock Jones from Stanford. As Jim mentioned earlier in the podcast, he was a guy who started very slowly and scouts were concerned, and there is a good amount of swing and miss. But a lot of that came early. Since that slow start, he's completely cut his strikeout rate down. He's got 20 homers and 15 steals, an OPS over 1100. And there's upside here. He was a two-sport guy. He's only been focusing on baseball much more recently. So I actually think that from a ceiling standpoint, I don't know that there is a college outfielder with a higher ceiling than Brock Jones. So that's I'm going that route.
I think this is where it gets interesting in this college or in this outfield draft, prospect draft. Is you mentioned the college prospects bunched up here. If you look at the top 200 prospects list, you've got your two high school outfield prep outfielders at the top in Jones and Green, got another one in Crawford at number 13. But from that point, you don't get to the next high school outfield prospect until all the way down at 35, and there are six college outfield prospects in that segment. So interesting to see how this will shake out here. And Jim, who do you take next? I'm guessing one of those college outfielders.
I was just saying that because I was trying to dissuade Jonathan from taking high school outfield. No, I'm going to take draft strategy. I see we should go 12 deep here. But anyway, I digress. I'm going to take Chase DeLauder, who I have been intrigued by all year. He broke his foot, so he didn't get to finish the season. But I believe in him. James Madison outfielder, 6'4", 235, tools, size, strength, performance, career 402 hitter, even though he never really got a full season into James Madison because of the pandemic, and they only played a half season last year, was really good on the Cape last year. One of the better approaches in college baseball. I know it's not a classic swing. There's a lot of guys in this draft. It seems like there's more first-round picks potential first-round picks this year that don't have classic swings. So I'm going to not worry about any of that. I'm taking Chase DeLauder here with the seventh overall pick in the outfield draft.
Jim, I've been persuaded. I think you're right. As I just said, this is where it gets interesting. We got a big bunch of college outfield prospects. Let's go to 12. Let's make it a dime.
I only prepared for five picks.
I'll point you to our draft top 200, Jonathan, if you need some candidates.
We'll take a break and let you do some preparation.
Make some calls.
All right, Jonathan, you're up at number 8.
You know, I was kind of
hoping. It's very tough.
No, it is tough. And I was kind of hoping you would take someone else so I could take DeLauder because he would have been my next pick. I think that the next slate of college guys, they all, there are some like questions, you know, whether it's a hit tool or, you know, maybe they're a tweener. So I'm not 100% sure. You know what? I know Tennessee got bounced, sooner than people would have liked, but I'm going to go to one of the best college teams in the country this year. And I'm going to take Drew Gilbert, who, you know, continued to show power at 11 homers. He slugged 673 and he hit 362 in that process, more walks and strikeouts this year. So the combination of the field to hit this year with the power showing up is why I chose him over some of the other options.
I thought you chose him because you liked his fire after he got ejected from the first super regional game.
Well, wait, that's a whole, let's not digress on the ridiculousness of all that. But
anyway, I will stick with Volunteers outfielders. I wasn't sure when you started going down the Volunteer outfielder path if you were going Drew Gilbert or Jordan Beck.
Yep.
But I will go with Jordan Beck, who played right field because Drew Gilbert's a good center fielder, but has a chance to play center field at the next level. You know, he does come with some swing and miss, but there's power, there's speed. It's hard to figure out. Like, you're doing the mock draft this week, Jonathan. Like, when you get like after about like 15 picks, and then you know you're going to have like six or seven college outfielders to lay out in the draft. Like, who's going where, and how you distinguish them? It's tough, but I like Jordan Beck. I mean, he gets compared to Hunter Renfroe a lot. Another SEC guy who kind of blossomed his junior year. Beck was pretty good last year too. I'll go Jordan Beck here with the ninth overall pick in the outfield draft. And I have no idea which way you're going with your next pick.
All right, Jonathan, surprise us.
It's the way I like to go. So I'm going back and forth because there are still, some guys with some tools, but with some of those aforementioned question marks. And then there are some guys who, like, I believe more in their ability to hit. But since you've extended, hopefully I can get, one from each bucket. So I think I'm going to go out west and take Dylan Beavers from Cal and sort of roll the dice on his power. He's hit 35 homers over his last 2 years at Cal. There's some swing and miss, but he drew a bunch of walks this year. He runs well, but he didn't steal that many bases this year. But you're really kind of buying on the power. I think he probably ends up as kind of a super athletic right fielder when all is said and done. But he has a chance to stay in center. Another one of these big, 6'4", moves really well for his size kind of guys. And he's only 20 at draft time, so that'll work well in my model.
The Mayo algorithm?
Yes, the Mayo algorithm.
He may have tipped his hand there a bit on his upcoming picks. Let's see if you swoop in there and steal.
I'm not sure, though, because I think there's two guys who are pretty proven hitters here. So he's going to be fine. He can get a proven hitter. But I will say, I like the way this draft has worked out. Like, I did want Drew Jones. I would have been fine with Crawford or Cross, but like just picking first was like advantageous. But just like his last pick, when he starts in Tennessee outfield, I was like, oh, is he going to take Jordan Beck, who I was looking at? When he was going out west, I was like, oh, no, he's going to take my guy. But then he didn't take my guy. I'm going to take Jacob Melton from Oregon State, the Pac-12 player of the year.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
You really hadn't got a chance to play. Was that going to be your guy, Jonathan? Or were you going the other guy who can go ahead?
Possibly.
Okay. But I was going to say, he's a guy who really had a chance to show what he could do. He barely played during the pandemic season, had a shoulder injury that limited him to about half season last year, came out Pac-12 player of the year again. It's not the most orthodox looking swing, but it produces results. He hits for average. He hits for power. He steals bases. I really like Jacob Melton. I think, he's another one of these guys who's, he's lower on our list. He's right now, he's 54. We'll change that. I'm sure he'll move up when we expand the list to 250 and move guys around. But he's a super interesting guy. So my six-man outfield now, no fly balls are dropping. We're my fine six-man outfield now.
All right. And the final pick of the draft, Jonathan.
Jim, who do you think I'm taking?
Mock draft.
Well, if you're going with the hitter, you know, you feel good about the hittability, the hitterish route.
Yep.
I think you're going Sterling Thompson.
You are correct, sir. Yeah, and I looked at Melton too. I love the Oregon State guys, and it's my part of the country. But I'm going to take Thompson, and you have the benefit that if you wanted to try him out on the dirt, he has played the infield some. Although I think he's really a corner outfielder. The bat really came alive as the year went on. You know, he hit well. The power started to show up, but it's really really like his smooth left-handed swing. There is going to be power. I mean, 6'4", 200. He's going to continue to add strength. So, you know, I think he has a chance to actually be one of the better hitters in this class when all is said and done. You know, he just hadn't done it much, and there was some questions about where he would play defensively. But, I think you put him in left field, and you just let that bat carry him up the ladder in a hurry.
And I would have picked, if you had picked Melton, I would have picked Sterling Thompson. So
there you go.
All right. So a few interesting things, just looking at the 12 outfield prospects that you guys selected here relative to the top 200 prospects list. Some guys ranked higher than the players that were taken here. The highest ranked player on our list that did not get taken, Henry Bolt, high school outfield prospect from Palo Alto, and then Sterling Thompson's outfield mate, Judd Fabian, who's ranked number 38. Would you guys say that this draft, even though this was done sort of a bit spur of the moment, you guys didn't put a ton of research into this particular draft, but would you say that this is reflective of how these guys are sort of moving, how the industry is feeling about them, or is this strictly kind of the personal taste of you two?
No, I think it reflects that. I think the top five guys we drafted will probably be the first five outfielders taken. I think they're all probably, you know, that was Jones, Green, Berry, Crawford, Cross are all going to go in the top 12 or 15 picks. And then after that, I think it is muddled. I think the five we picked prior, if I had to guess as of today, would be my choice to be the next five picked. But, you know, you could see Bolte sneak in there to somebody. You know, Spencer Jones from Vanderbilt's another guy. But I think it is fairly reflective, Jonathan.
Right. Yeah, I think so. It's, you know, I think you could shuffle that second set of the college guys, you know. Could Chase DeLauder go ahead of Brock Jones? You know, could Brock Jones go behind DeLauder and Gilbert and even Beck? Sure. I mean, I think they're somewhat interchangeable, and it'll depend on how things transpire. I think the names are right based on what we've been hearing still a month out before draft time.
Yeah, I mean, you guys have Brock Jones going sixth in this draft, ranked number 31. But going ahead of guys ranked 19, 28, 22, 27, and then Jacob Melton being the lowest ranked player in this list. And both of those guys, are these both guys, Melton and Jones, who you'd say have helium, and specifically because of their performance in regionals and super regionals? Is that fair to say?
Melton probably more than just the regionals. You know, he really was swinging the bat well for most of the year. And Jones too. I mean, I think it's they both were continuing what they were doing. You know, I think Jones, we've talked a bunch about him. He entered the spring, you know, he looked like a guy who could be belonging in the top 10 conversation, and then was so bad early that he fell off, and now he's kind of regained his footing. I think there are too many questions about the swing and miss for him to climb that high. But, you know, if he goes off in Omaha, it wouldn't surprise me if he continues to float upwards towards the teams that would prefer a college bat with his kind of athleticism.
All right. That is going to be a wrap for this week's MLB Pipeline podcast. Thanks very much to Ed Casey for that question. Thanks, of course, to Henry Davis for joining us. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss an episode. If you're enjoying the show or have any suggestions, leave us a rating and a review. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you next week.